So, Emmanuel, yes.
Just want to make a brief comment about PALB2. Since many people consider me to be a genetics nerd, it stands for partner and localizer of BRCA2. Partner and localizer of BRCA2. So it directly interacts with BRCA2. So it's not a stretch of the imagination to believe this gene is going to be important. We've had two data sets now that suggest that PALB2 is going to respond more favorably to PARP inhibition than other genes like CHK2 and CDK12. The first is the TOPARP-B data that Oliver mentioned. The second is the TRITON2 data presented by Wassim Abida and recently published in Clinical Cancer Research. In that study, using rucaparib as opposed to olaparib, there were also a number of patients, still less than five, with PALB2 mutations, some of which had very dramatic and long-lived responses to rucaparib. The other two genes to keep in mind that are very rare but do induce profound responses or can induce, one is FANCA, Fanconi Anemia A, and the second is RAD51. So there is emerging data on the non-BRCA HR genes that may respond well to PARP inhibition. CHK2 does not appear to be one of them. CDK12 does not. ATM does not. But potentially, PALB2, yes. FANCA, yes. And RAD51, yes.
Partner of localizer, is that it?
Partner and localizer of BRCA2.
Partner, so the PAL is a partner and a localizer. I like it. I like it. Very intuitive. But I did want to get back to this issue of this clinical scenario of a patient progressing on primary endocrine therapy. And we had Oliver, his fantastic phase III trial presented at ESMO last year, looking at those patients. Of course, this is not about BRCA, this is just prostate cancer. Looking at those patients comparing cabazitaxel to a second form of endocrine therapy. Paclitaxel did a lot better. Everybody started to switch to therapy. So again, putting aside the BRCA, a more typical patient that doesn't, Oliver, are you still moving towards, say, cabazitaxel in that situation right now with COVID going on?
I'm trying to diminish my chemotherapy patients, not only as an immunosuppressive, potentially making them more susceptible to COVID, but having potential consequences of a COVID infection that would be worse. But in addition, the repetitive trips to the hospital and the blood testing and the infusion unit. So I'm trying to keep patients away from the clinic to the extent feasible. And absolutely referring to the CARD study, a very nice study with cabazitaxel showing benefit as opposed to AR after AR inhibitor therapy. But nevertheless, today I'm trying to keep away from the myelosuppressive chemotherapies to the extent feasible because of the virus.
Again, not to get too far off track, Emmanuel, but I'm curious how you're approaching this. Are you incorporating AR-V7 assays into your clinical decision outside a clinical trial? Any other comments about how you're approaching this right now with COVID going on?
I think with COVID going on, the goal is to keep people off chemotherapy as long as they're not very symptomatic from bone disease. And I have to admit, with or without ARV7, I am more likely to go from one AR therapy to another in this current climate than I was before, or to consider off-label therapy with drugs such as PARP inhibitors that are oral and not intravenous.
This concludes our program. Check out our new podcast, Oncology Today, and hear more from these three investigators, specifically how they manage prostate cancer in general during the COVID pandemic. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love on the CME program on the current and future role of PARP inhibition in the management of prostate cancer.